Welcome to the realm of heroes and monsters. Storytime with your host, A.P. Fuchs. Stories of intrigue, stories of horror, stories of superheroics, stories of monsters. Get ready, the thrill ride begins.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Here we are, season 2 finale of the Realm of Heroes and Monsters Storytime Podcast with me, your host, artist-writer A.P. Fuchs, Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, smack dab middle of the continent. And we are here. We're at the end of the season. We did it. You guys came along with me for the ride. You went to see what season 1. You did that. That was 30 episodes, and now we're on season 2. Season 2 is now concluding with this episode here. And, I mean, that's 2 in the bag, man. That's pretty good. I mean, that's not bad, you know. A lot of people start podcasts and don't finish. So I'm really happy that you guys tuned in, and the fact that you propelled me to go on to, you know, do a second season and to keep going. And with more people coming on board with season 2, it's like, okay, now we're going to do a season 3. You know, so thank you. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in to this podcast. If you're a first-time listener listening to this finale episode, welcome. Welcome aboard. You know, this finale episode, even though it's a finale, will still give you a story. It'll still give you some entertainment. So yeah, listen to the whole episode and then double back and head back to either season 1, season 2, or pick a story at random, whatever tickles your fancy as per the descriptions. I mean, you're invited. This is about you. This is about giving you some fun. It's about giving you some free entertainment. And let's be honest, guys, we live in an expensive economy right now. Entertainment ain't cheap, right? So here's a chance. Get some free stuff. And, you know, give your wallet a bit of a break. So, thank you for tuning in for this past season. It's been a big, big fun, a lot of fun. I've enjoyed, actually, the season 2 format as opposed to the season 1 format. I mean, if you've been with me since season 1, I want to say thank you for your patience. I really do. Because that was, you know, it's my first podcasting effort. It takes time. Any podcaster would tell you that it takes time to sort of get your flow going, you know, sort of, as they say, grow the beard for your program. And yeah, so like there was some missteps in season 1. I'm not saying anything that it was terrible. I'm not saying it that way, but more so just there was some missteps I fully acknowledge. You know, there's some slips, some things that could have gone better. But at the same time, you know, we still went through with story time and had the show and all the rest. So I've learned a lot from my experience with season 1. And now with season 2 being concluded, I learned a lot during the course of this season in terms of how to do the show and in terms of how to bring you story time. And yeah, I mean, what I'm going to try to do when we go into season 3, because we're taking a break first and then we're going to get season 3 done, is, I want to sort of take sort of all that stuff that I learned between first season and second season, and then I'm going to apply them to season 3. I'm going to do my best to, for you, to make season 3 sort of like the super parts of 1 and 2 combined, you know, because if you want to talk, say, trilogies, even though the podcast I do have plans for a fourth season, but if you want to talk sort of like the trilogy angle, you know, how we do with movies, it's kind of like that, right? So the first one sort of has, you know, it's kind of setting things up, kind of has, you know, a few bumps and scrapes. Number 2 is kind of like, you know, you're really getting into it, getting into the jive, and then 3 is like, you know, supposed to be bigger than the other 2, you know, in terms of just how it's done. So I can't promise I'm going to succeed, because every listener is different. Every listener has different tastes. Every listener has different perspectives and all the rest. So what I'm going to try to do for the next season is I'm going to try to like undercut all that preference stuff and go for what we share commonly as humans in terms of how we approach storytelling, how we appreciate storytelling, how we receive storytelling. There are common threads, regardless of whatever your genre, whatever your pick, whatever your style, whatever you want to hear. There's always these undercurrents, because there's always something called principles, and principles apply in storytelling to humans in terms of reception. It's true. Like, we receive a story a certain way based on certain principles. We react to a story a certain way based on certain principles. So, and principles don't change. They're principles for that reason. Principles are principles. So that's the goal. So that's what we have looked forward to for season 3, is the aim of trying to take the principles and therefore giving you a show that will be entertaining and fun. Anyway, enough about that. the story to come. I talk more about why I chose this story for the last episode in the story behind the story segment, so be sure to tune in for that part of it. I don't want to give too much away, but if you are a Jack the Ripper fan, this next story, this final story, this episode, finale story, I guess you could say, this one's for you. This is for the Ripperologists out there. This is for those who have multiple theories as to who Jack might have been. This is to those who believe they have the facts together and think they are right. And these are also for those who are skeptics and or have partial facts and have an idea or a theory or theories as to who Jack might have been. And lastly, regarding good old Bloody Jack, is this. You know, he's one of the few serial killers in history who has built around him a lore, right? Who has, well, technically he didn't do it, we did. But the point is, though, how he did it, you know, how he went about the things. If you look into the Ripper murders, you'll see it's very bizarre in terms of how things were done, and a lot of stuff, a lot of mythology, and a lot of ideas, and a lot of concepts could be drawn just purely from the murder scenes themselves, you know, and that's what messed up the cops back then. It was, you know, and Scotland Yard got involved in all this stuff. It's just the way he constructed things. It was almost like, as you know, as grisly and as horrible and as terrible as what he did to those women. He constructed sort of a kind of a narrative around what he was doing while he was doing it, and that contradicts your quote unquote average serial killer, right? The average serial killer just kills people and they do it over and over until they get caught, right? And sometimes there's a pattern, sometimes there's a calling card, but at the same time, that's basically, it's kind of a bare bones approach, right? Whereas Jack, there was sort of like a method to the madness. There was some sort of message he was trying to convey. You know, how it was interpreted, of course, is up to the person on the scene after the fact, you know. But yeah, Jack was a storyteller in that context. Horrible man. I'm gonna make that clear. I don't stand at all by his actions. But in terms of the storytelling side of things, and bringing that aspect into the real life murders, that's pretty smart. I mean, I don't think he was an idiot. You know, I suggest when it comes to Jack that he was either one of two things, right? He was either one, a genuinely smart, educated person, right? Or two, he was your standard serial killer who had a couple, I guess you could say, hints into cleverness, right? So he was basically, you know, your average person, but he had a few street smarts, and he applied that to the murders instead. And basically threw out a massive red herring to the cops, which in turn would put them pointing in the other direction. They're looking for somebody smart, when in reality, Jack was just your average dude. And, you know, he was only smart in that one aspect, the red herring. Anyway, enough about that. Let's get right into it, because we're going to hear the story about Mr. Jitterbones. Click, clackety, clack, clack. Click, clackety, clack, clack. Mr. Jitterbones. In London's East End, they celebrate Halloween. Jack McClay thought that after what happened last autumn, they wouldn't celebrate it anymore. Not after the deaths of those five prostitutes. Their killer was never caught. No one knew who did it, but rumors abounded. Some still maintained it was a fellow dubbed Leather Apron, while others suggested it was Prince Edward, though this rumor was scarcely heard. Others thought it was the work of a cult. Either way, the women were dead. Jack now hated the fact that he shared the namesake of their killer, Jack the Ripper. Or, at least, that's what the papers had named him. The East End still hadn't recovered from that terrible autumn, and Jack thought no one wanted to see anyone parading around in a costume this year. He was wrong. The sky was overcast with gray clouds, a hint of rain on the air. Though it was October 31st, the snow had yet to fall. It had been a warm autumn so far. The pale light of London street lamps created shadows around the buildings in the cracks of the cobbles. Anyone with even a hint of imagination could picture a serial killer lurking around there in the shadows, clad in black, ready to strike. But Jack knew better. He knew these streets well. After all, he grew up on them. Abandoned when he was just 7 years old, he remained on the street, struggling to live day to day, finding food in trash cans or in the scraps people left on their plates in restaurants. He didn't mind the hard life, though. It was all he knew. There was never a better way. He was 20 years old now. He couldn't recall his parents' faces if he tried. All he could remember about them was their warmth, the security he felt when he was around them. But that was memory, almost myth. Clad in a brown overcoat and matching trousers, he made his way to the alley behind the Ten Bells. He had been living there for almost a year. Last autumn, he was living in an alley near Miller's Court, but after Mary Kelly got her throat cut, he couldn't stay there any longer. He knew her, too. She used to work the corners around there, propositioning men for any amount they would be willing to pay for 10 minutes of her company. She was beautiful, with long hair, captivating eyes, and a well-formed figure that spoke of youth. She was close to his age as well, only 25. He was sorry she died and often wondered what she could have done that made a madman stop by her abode one night and cut her to pieces. Near his home now, Jack stuffed his hands in his pockets, but not before pulling up the collar of his jacket around his neck. A breeze was picking up. Off on the next street, he heard the lilt of a woman laughing and the shout of a man hollering at someone, and the clip-clopping of hooves against the cobbles and the sound of a wagon's wheels as they rolled along the street. It was London. It was the East End. Poverty and despair hung on the air like smoke in a pub. It made his flesh crawl. But it was all he knew, and he had resigned to it long ago. Jack approached his home, a large wooden crate turned on its side against the rear wall of the Ten Bells. The owner, Mr. Harris, said he could stay there as long as he stayed out of trouble and minded his own business. At Christmas last year, things got rowdy at the Ten Bells and a fellow had tried robbing the place. Jack happened to be in the bar that night and apprehended the robber before any harm could be done. Mr. Harris was indebted to Jack. The back alley was now his. No one came down the back alley anyway except the occasional prostitute and her client. On those nights, Jack would leave and come back a half hour later. 30 minutes was more than enough time for the man to get what needed doing done and the woman to collect her pay. It was just after 6 now. The children would be along soon. The parents would want them indoors early. Bad men came out at night. Bad women, too. A dog barked in the distance. Jack crawled inside his crate and sat down. In the corner was his pillow and an old copy of the London Times, dated August 12, 1889. He had read it over 20 times. There was nothing better to do some days. In the other corner he had an old potato sack and within it a small wooden box that he found in the trash one evening. In the box were the treats for the children. Mints, a few chocolates. Nothing spectacular. But the children were thankful, their parents usually unable to afford them any treats. Halloween was a special time for children. "Wonder what they'll be wearing tonight," Jack said to himself. The children's costumes were usually just their parents' clothes, the boys with mustaches painted on their face with charcoal, the girls wearing an old dress of their mother's. They pretended to be grown-ups. A few of the richer kids, though no one was rich in the East End, dressed as vampires or undertakers or corpses. Some of the girls dressed as witches. The costumes were rudimentary, and only when expecting their guys closely did you see what they were supposed to be. But the kids' hearts were in it, and that was what was important. Halloween was a chance for them to be free of their daily burdens and a chance to just be children. Jack smiled at the thought of Frederick, Freddy, coming by. Last year,
Freddy wore his father's apron and rubber gloves and pretended to be a butcher. Jack wondered what Freddy would be this year. Probably the same thing, he thought. He didn't know if Freddy could afford a new costume, but he looked forward to seeing the kid's dirty blonde hair, blue eyes, and dirt-smudged cheeks again. A constable's whistle shrilled a few streets over, followed by the clamoring of footfalls and some shouting. Sounds carried easily in the East End, with its low buildings and open spaces. Jack glanced up at the moon peeking in from behind the cloud. The children would be along shortly. The children had come a half hour later, all rags and smiles, anxious for their treats. There had only been 10 of them. Few children came by the back alley of the 10 Bells. But Freddy hadn't come. Each time a child came by, a small cloth bag opened to receive a chocolate or mint, Jack hoped that Freddy would be the next kid to receive something. After 9 of the kids came, Jack had only one piece of chocolate left. By the 10th kid, a little girl wearing her mother's dress and a kerchief over her head, Jack had to turn her away and tell her he had nothing to give her. The girl, so sweet, still said thank you and gave him a curtsy before moving on to her next stop. Safely tucked away in the corner of his wooden box was Freddy's chocolate. I hope you come by tonight, old chap, Jack thought. He glanced up at the sky. The moon sat in the middle of a swirl of clouds, a nimbus around the moon. It was 10:15. It was late. Then again, I guess you won't be. Your mom wouldn't let you out this late if she had any sense. There are bad men about. Maybe she'll come by with you. Maybe not, as I know she has to get up early at the bookstore. Your dad? Let's hope so. It was after 11 when Jack finally gave up waiting. Downhearted, he placed the wooden box in the potato sack and shoved it in the corner of the crate. Scrunched off up to the side was his blanket. He straightened it and lay his head down on the hard floor, draping the blanket over him. It didn't provide much warmth, and he could already feel the chill of the night settling in his bones. It wasn't long before it began to drizzle, and soon after that, the rain came steadily, drumming a soothing rhythm against the top of the crate. A few drops leaked through the cracks in his roof, and he shivered when the cool drops soaked through the blanket and jacket. Just another night in the East End. After midnight, it was still raining. Jack was having a hard time staying asleep. He awoke every 15 minutes or so, the thunder crashing in the sky, jolting him out of slumber. It was nearly black in the alley. The only light came from the lamps on either end of it, lighting the streets that ran adjacent to his home. There weren't any people out. All had gone indoors once the rain really started to come down. At the next flicker of lightning and crash of thunder, he sat up, blanket drawn about his shoulders. Jael was sleeping, he muttered. The only problem with not having a proper home was there was nothing to do when sleep failed to pass the time. He thought of Freddy again, and of his butcher costume from the year before. Now that he thought about it, he was surprised Freddy wore such a costume, what with all the talk of leather apron and bloody jack. But it was all Freddy had, he supposed. Couldn't hold it against the kid. Children were supposed to be allowed a good time as much as adults were. Rain ran off the top left corner of the crate. Jack reached over, cupped his hands beneath the runoff, and filled them with water. He brought his hands to his mouth, slurped some of it, then used the rest to wash his face. The cool water helped clear his head. The thunder rumbled, then crashed with power. It echoed on the air. The sound faded away after a few moments and was replaced by complete silence. And then, click, clackety clack clack. Click, clackety clack clack. Silence again. Jack thought the sound to be his imagination. He brought his knees to his chest and wrapped his blanket around them. Chin on his knees, he closed his eyes, hoping to doze off. He thought of how he would obtain breakfast the following morning. He might find some change on the cobbles, Some usually could be found in front of the 10 bells, the change having spilled out of the pockets of the drunkards as he stumbled along home. He might need to go into town where it wasn't as poor and beg. He hated having to do that. All Londoners stuck up their noses when an unfortunate from the East End bothered them for money. "We'll see," he said. Click, clackety clack clack. Click, clackety clack clack. It was like two sticks tapping against each other. His eyes shot open. This time he knew it wasn't his imagination. He inched his way to the edge of the opening of the crate and peered both ways up the alley. No one was there. "Bugger," he said. "Whoever's doing that ought to let me have some sleep." He leaned against the inside of the crate and closed his eyes. The rain was letting up, though it still kept a steady drumbeat against his roof. He was glad he was indoors, in a manner of speaking. There was a time when on rainy nights he didn't have anywhere to go and had to brave the weather by cramming himself up against door frames or steps partly covered by an awning just to keep relatively dry. He was glad he had found this crate and that Mr. Harris was so hospitable in letting him use his alley. The night wore on. Click, clackety clack clack. Click, clackety clack clack. Click, clackety clack clack. Jack snarled. "That does it." He threw back his blanket, crawled out of his crate, and quickly got to his feet. The alley was bare of any life. Just a few trash cans, some litter, and puddles twinkling in the lamplight. "Who's there?" he called. No one answered. The thunder rumbled, but didn't crash. The rain had eased even more, just dribbling now. With a huff, Jack went back into his crate and pulled a cigarette out of a beat-up old pack from his breast pocket. He pulled a match out of the other breast pocket and struck it against the crate's sharp wooden corner. He lit his cigarette and tossed the match in a puddle not far from him, and went out with little fits. As he drew heavily on the cigarette, the sound returned. Click, clackety clack clack. Click, clackety clack clack. A thud on Jack's roof. Empty and hollow. Thick-soled boots on wood. It was above him, whatever it was. He wanted to get out of the crate and see what caused the noise, but, heart suddenly pounding, something told him he shouldn't. He decided to wait. Silence. Silence for an eternity. Was it still there, whatever it was? It could have been something that had fallen off old Mr. Harris's roof and landed on the crate. His crate was right up against the brick and mortar. It surely was possible. He dragged on his cigarette, the sizzling sound of its cherry burning away of the paper and tobacco somewhat soothing. A dull thud, but not as loud as before. Movement. Something was up there. Jack tucked in his legs and inched his bottom along the inside of the crate so he was against the far wall. Another thud, and then a splash, as whatever it was jumped off his roof and landed in the puddle beside the crate. Cock-spoosh. A cat? Maybe. Cats were common in the alleys, but a cat doesn't wear thick-soled boots. So Jack waited, listened, wanting to see if any more sounds would come. Then, click, clackety clack clack. A pause. Then another, click, clackety clack clack. Jack put the remainder of his cigarette out on the worn sole of his right shoe and crawled to the crate's entrance. His heart thumped rapidly in his chest. Click, clackety clack clack. Click, clackety clack clack. Click, clackety clack clack. It was moving around. He swallowed a hard lump in his throat, like a small stone. He could almost hear it splash as it hit the rainwater in his stomach. There was a tickle in his throat, and he coughed. His palm immediately shot to his lips, too late to conceal the sound. A footstep on the cobbles. Clack. Jack breathed heavily through his nose. The tickle was still there, and he so badly wanted to clear it. And he did. He couldn't help himself. The phlegm rising, then settling in his throat, suddenly seemed loud in the dead air. Play it safe, he told himself. You'll wind up buggered if you don't. He peered through a crack in the wood beside him. There wasn't enough light to see anything. All he could see was a smudge of black and a little bit of brown of the wet street. Even the light from the street lamp at the end of the alleyway was dim. "Hmm," he whispered. For a long time there wasn't any more clacking. The only sound was the runoff water finding its way off roofs into the puddles on the streets. Gathering his courage, he crawled out of the crate. A man was beside it. The man wore a top hat. No hair, just skin so thin you could see the bone underneath. His eyes were enormous, round, bugging out of his head. The irises were as black as charcoal and surrounded by a thin ring of white. He wore a torn tuxedo, the bow tie untied and hanging unevenly around his neck. The cummerbund, that looked to be once bright red, was now a tarnished maroon, as if it had been covered in dirt for 100 years and only recently recovered. Curls of smoke drifted faintly from the man's ears, as if his insides were on fire. And there, held in his right hand, hanging casually by his side, was an axe. The two men stared at each other for a long time. Jack didn't know for how long. The moment was broken when the man's deep red lips curled up in a snarl, revealing crooked yellow teeth. Jack's left heel began nervously tapping on the ground. The man just stared at him. Jack's mouth was so dry his tongue stuck to the roof of it. He gathered as much spit as he could to free it. When he spoke, his voice was weak, barely heard. Who are you? He took a breath. Who are you? The man didn't respond, but instead came a few steps closer. Click, clackety clack clack, click clack. So it was him who had made the noise. Jack glanced up to the roof of the 10 bells and wondered how this man could have jumped from that high up and not hurt himself or broken his legs. The man shuffled a few steps to Jack's left. Click, clackety clack clack. His bones click when he moves, Jack thought. Mr. Jitterbones. It was as good a name as any. Mr. Jitterbones continued to eye Jack, his pale thumb rubbing up and down the hilt of the axe handle. The tarnished gray steel of the axe's blade was stained a deep maroon, matching that of Mr. Jitterbones' cummerbund. When it was apparent Mr. Jitterbones wasn't going to answer him, Jack asked again. Who are you? He liked how his voice had gained some backbone. The man was in his alley. He dropped down on his roof. Trespasser. Mr. Jitterbones raised his axe to waist height and took a step closer to him, bones clacking. Fine, Jack said, arms outstretched. You don't want to talk? Then the hell with you. I don't need this. There was a long silence. Go on. Get, Jack shouted and pointed down the alley. Mr. Jitterbones grimaced and brought the axe shoulder level and grabbed hold of its handle with both hands. He took a step closer. There was a small click of his bones. Jack's heart sped up again. He didn't want to have to fight, but if that's how this was going to pan out, so be it. He looked both ways down the alley. There's ne'er a flat foot around when you need one. All right, you don't want to leave? Fine. And he brought up his fists. The way Mr. Jitterbones looked at him right then was like that of an adult looking at a child who wanted to fight. You have no hope, son. I'm bigger and stronger than you. Mr. Jitterbones bowed, one hand one way, the one with the axe going the other. He straightened, then came at Jack. Jack moved, but not quickly enough, and the axe grazed his shoulder, cutting through his jacket and into the muscle. Ugh! He screamed, and his left hand went immediately to the wound. Dumb move, because, using the vulnerability to his advantage, Mr. Jitterbone sliced at his left side and tore a chunk of meat out of that shoulder as well. Jack staggered back a step, blood already soaking through his jacket. Mr. Jitterbones advanced. Click, clackety-clack. For someone who looked as fragile as a skeleton, Mrs. Jitterbones moved, albeit clumsily, with great speed. Jack swung at him. Mr. Jitterbones ducked, and his axe went for Jack's thigh, tearing the trousers and slicing off a sliver of meat. Warm blood flowed down Jack's leg. He daren't look, but he did anyway, and cringed when he saw a bloody mess of brown fabric, the pinky red of flesh, and a bit of the beige of his skin. With his other leg, Jack kicked Mr. Jitterbones, his foot connecting with the bone man's stomach. It was like hitting a bag filled with gravel. Mr. Jitterbones ambled back a few steps, then straightened. He snarled, his lips again curling up to show his yellow, crooked teeth. Jack tried to call for help, but his voice was caught somewhere between the fire in his legs and in his shoulders. He was surprised that no police officer had crossed the mouth of the alleyway yet, or that Mr. Harris hadn't come out to see what all the ruckus was about. Where was everyone? There was no use in fighting Mr. Jitterbones, not unless he wanted to be slowly hacked to pieces. Then a thought occurred to him. Is Mr. Jitterbones the Ripper? He's gotten me up, just like those girls that were done in. It certainly seemed possible, but Jack couldn't wholly convince himself of it. Jack the Ripper had this phantom-like air about him. He was mysterious. Mr. Jitterbones was merely a butcher. No finesse, no mystery, just plain carnage. Then again, Bloody Jack was like that as well. Before he realized what he was doing, Jack began hobbling down the alley, trying to get away. Mr. Jitterbones stormed after him. Click, clackety, clack, clack, click, clackety, clack. There was a hot pain in Jack's right calf as Mr. Jitterbones cleaved off another piece. Blood spilled from the wound and ran down his ankle, puddling in his shoe. He fell, and Mr. Jitterbones was on top of him. The bony man turned him over, pinning him. Mr. Jitterbones was light, and Jack could have easily thrown him off, but nothing was registering right now, nothing but the thought of that blood-stained axe coming down on his face or neck and ending his poor, meaningless existence. Freddy, Jack heard himself say. His voice was weak and cracked. Freddy didn't come by tonight. Didn't see him. Couldn't give him his chocolate. Couldn't do nothing. Couldn't. Mr. Jitterbone's dark eyes glared at him, the rings of white around them so bright in contrast they looked almost like halos. Then Jack saw something he never expected. There, like a reflection in a murky puddle, he saw Freddy's face flash across Mr. Jitterbone's, and just as suddenly, was gone. Freddy? He stammered. An image of the boy's tousled blonde hair, dirty cheeks, and bright blue eyes danced in his mind. Mr. Jitterbones grimaced, then grunted. He raised the axe to Jack's face. Please, please, I beg you, let me live, Jack said, pleaded. He supposed that this dark creature must have heard these same pleas before. Many times before. Had Freddy said the same thing? Or had he been so terrified of the man with the clicking bones and torn tuxedo that smelled of garlic and trash that he didn't know what to say? The axe's blade grazed along Jack's neck. He could only lay there, trembling, his heart pounding so hard he was finding it difficult to breathe. The axe's blade was warm at its edge, cool along the blade side. Jack swallowed, the rise of his Adam's apple putting pressure against the axe's edge. The blade tore the skin as a result, and a drop of blood leaked from, then rolled, down his neck. Mr. Jitterbones looked surprised that this had happened, but he also looked pleased. I'm sorry, Jack said. He didn't know why he said it, but it seemed fitting. He must have done something wrong for Mr. Jitterbones to want to murder him. Jack tried to move, tried to push Mr. Jitterbones off him. He grabbed the bone man by the neck, squeezing, hoping to cut off any air going to this ghost of a man. If he needed air, that was. Smoke trailed out of Mr. Jitterbones' ears, tainting the air with its smell, like dried corn left on the fire too long. With his bony fingers, Mr. Jitterbones grabbed Jack's wrist and pressed on the tendons just below Jack's palms. Jack felt his fingers curl and the strength go out of his hands. The next thing he knew, both his wrists were pinned into the damp, cool pavement above his head. That's when the axe came down. All Jack saw was darkness. Something wet splashed his face. There was a mist on the air, gray mixed with salmon pink. It didn't smell like anything, but it sure felt like something. Like a dusty wind, but warmer. Jack took a step forward and heard the stirring of water. He looked down. He was up to his knees in a warm, murky red and brown liquid. Blood? No, couldn't be blood. Jack waded further into the misty air, hardly able to see anything. He waved at the fog with his fingers. The pink smoke swirled as he did, but just as quickly brought itself together again, like pawing at water or raindrops. Where am I? He thought. Where? Then he remembered. Halloween. Mr. Jitterbones. The axe with the blood-stained blade. The alley. His crate. The children in the chocolates and mints. And Freddy. Freddy didn't come tonight. He bent down and touched the red and brown liquid. It was oily and smelled like trash. Like Mr. Jitterbones. The bed of this red river was soft and cushy, like walking on a sponge or damp pillow. Then Jack remembered the cut on his neck from Mr. Jitterbones' axe. He touched where the wound would be. There was a small, damp scratch, but nothing worse. He checked his shoulders and legs, all seeming fine, albeit a bit sore. Thank God, he thought. I'm alive, but... Am I? I'm just dreaming, that's all. Gotta be. Have to be. Yet he wasn't able to convince himself. In dreams, no matter how real they seemed, there was still a padding to them, an air of reassurance that what you were witnessing couldn't possibly be real, and when you awoke, though your heart was pounding, you recalled that reassurance and smiled in relief it was just a nightmare. But not here. Not in this place of pink smoke and oily reddish-brown water. Jack's senses were alive. He could still feel the grease on his fingertips from having touched the water. The murky pink mist had a texture to it as well, like the tiny dots you saw in mist when it rose off the streets in the morning. The smell of trash from the water still lingered in his nostrils. He dared not taste it. He didn't want that filth inside him. But this was real. It had to be. He put his fingers to his temples. Just calm down. It'll be all right. Just hang on a tick. All will be well. Has to be. Jack? Jack dropped his hands and looked around. Who's there? Jack? It's me. Do you have a candy? The voice was high. A boy's voice. It was hollow and echoey and seemed to come from all around. Jack whirled about, the water splashing around his knees, making his thighs wet as he did. The warm water soon cooled and goose flesh formed on his skin. The hairs on his arms and neck stood on end. Who is it? Who's there? Tell me. It's me, Freddy. Freddy? He rolled around once more. Freddy, where are you? I'm here, Jack. Honest. Jack sloshed through the oily swamp, pawing at the mist that hung in the air, as if parting the blinds of a window, hoping it would help him see better. But the pink mist remained as thick as ever. Freddy! Freddy, call my name so I could find you. But Freddy didn't call his name. Instead, the boy said, We're inside him, Jack. We're inside the skeleton man. He sounds like two sticks hitting each other when he walks, too. I know Freddy. I know he does. Where are you? I'm here. I'm here, I promise. The boy wasn't making sense. Jack stopped his trudging and put his head between his legs. The sharp, garbage scent of the water made him stand upright almost immediately. Mucus caught in the back of his throat. He thought he was going to throw up. He didn't. Instead, he swallowed and waited. Legs tired. Knees sore. He so badly wanted to sit down. But there was nowhere to sit. I saw the girls, Jack, Freddy said. I saw them, and they came up to me and gave me a hug. Girls? What girls, Freddy? Which ones? There's no one here. His voice was quiet, tired. It was a few moments before Freddy answered. The ones who went missing last year. There's five of them, and they're all here. All of them. One says she knows you. Says her name's Mary. Do you know her? Yeah, Freddy. I know her. I knew her. I know her. Suddenly, the water stirred, and blurred shapes appeared below its surface. Jack swallowed, the sharp taste of mucus still lingering. Five women rose out of the water, surrounding him. Their pale white faces were pruned, their skin having been in the water too long. Their dresses were in tatters, the dark material clinging to them, outlining their skinny, starved bodies. The brown and red liquid dripped off them slowly, ran down their faces and gaunt necks and collarbones, almost in slow motion. All had eyes set in a ring of gray. Slowly, they waded toward him. Jack stood at the ready, ready to grab whichever one attacked him first. But there, off a ways in the pink mist, was Freddy, looking on. Freddy? Jack said. What are they doing? It's okay, Freddy said. The women came closer, arms reaching out toward him. It's okay. They've come to take you home. Mary grabbed Jack by the shoulders and pulled him down to the water. The others joined her, and there, echoing throughout the murky liquid, was the low drum of two sticks tapping together.
All right, story behind the story time. Now, Mr. Jitterbones, in the Magic Man Plus 15 Tales of Terror Horror Anthology, well, not actually anthology, collection by me, here it was left for last in the book. And the reason it was left for last in the book is because it was last in the book, but it was first in terms of me being published in my very first anthology from Cyberpulp Press. This was in 2003 and a long time ago. But this was at the beginning of my writing career. And this, I remember very clearly, I was at work one day and I was corresponding emails with the publisher of the anthology. And I told him, I said, I have this idea for a story. I would really love to be part of your annual Halloween anthology. You know, do you accept this concept? And he wrote back and said, get writing. I'm saving a spot for you. So I thought, oh, this is fantastic. I mean, like, again, I'm starting out, man. So like someone else wanting my stuff, big deal, right? So I got down, I got to writing, and and at the time too, especially, I was researching Ripper mythology and Ripper lore and Ripper history based upon, you know, the stuff that we have, the stuff that we know in terms of what's fact, and then also the stuff we discerned of what's fiction. And anyway, I was all into that, right? So I made my own sort of Jack the Ripper story, but attributed Jack to being somebody else, something mysterious, because Jack, over the years and over the, well, now about 150 years roughly later, he's just been steeped in this legend and mythology. He's become much more than just a crazy serial killer, right? So I wanted to play into that and therefore give it a supernatural sort of twist to it. So yeah, I went ahead and did that and submitted the story, and, you know, outside of the standard, you know, editor editing the story for the anthology, it got in, and I was in the book. I mean, you know, company with a pile of small press people. I mean, again, this is during the era, pre-publishing, like, sorry, digital publishing boom, right? So, like, doing stuff like this, these types of projects, when they came out in the small press circles, it was a big deal, you know? It was fun, and that's what it was back then. It was fun. It was, like, it was community. It was writers together and doing these projects together. And, you know, yeah, we all had our separate stuff that we were doing in terms of our own, like, you know, material us only stuff. But we all still had this sort of camaraderie and this stuff. And it wasn't this group of, like, nowadays where it's like basically writers marketing to writers. And that's like a stupid effort. So, like, it's just, yeah, like, it was different back then. It was us saying, like, hey, let's do some new things, and let's create some stories, and let's create some anthologies, and you know, those who have access to the tools, like at the time, right, who had access to the tools, you know, could put this stuff together, and we could all, you know, get in on this and help out and whatever. And yeah, so these fun projects were done, and it was great, right? So I miss those days. I do. I really do. So the Mr. Judabon story, which is also available not just in the Magic Man collection, but also as just a downloadable ebook, or e-short story, I guess you could say, you know, is a very special story to me because it was one of the first, right? Like, we talked earlier in the season about the story Ragman that I read, and how that was my first published story, but it was published digitally, right? It never saw print until later, so... You know, the Judabones thing, that was my first print effort, and it were someone else printing for me, and huge deal for a young writer. I mean, man, that was awesome. And nowadays it's different, you know, like the new writers who start out is, you know, yes, great when they get accepted into this or that, but the magic's not quite the same. And my hope for the creative community going forward is that we create that magic somehow, you know, that we stop taking our eyes off the dollar sign and start looking at the art. Why? Because if you look at the art first, right, and you do a good job with the art first, and by art, I'm talking to any medium, okay? So, you know, writing, drawing, whatever, right? So if you focus on that first, if you're concerned about the financial side of things, that stuff will follow, provided that you put the art first and you do your effort in the art and you do your best with the art, you know? And that sort of thing. So that's my encouragement to creators now. It's just, you know, stop looking at the dollar sign. Stop looking at the numbers and focus on the art. All that other stuff will follow. There's an order to it, right? The creation comes first and all that other stuff is later. So anyway, that's my ramble on that part of it. And what's coming up really cool that we're going to share with you, because we're doing the season 2 finale right now, is now we gave you the story behind the story, and now I'm going to give you a story of the story to come. Well, not really a story per se, but a thing for after the credits that I really want you to stick around for. Because this was a chance for me to... I don't want to give too much away because I do not want to spoil it. To take the Mr. Judabones concept, but do it in another form. Okay? So we're still writing, but a different type of writing. And also, it turned into a performance. So you will see a performance after the credits. So please be sure to stick around for that, all right? And then further to that, in terms of story behind the story stuff, let's just talk about the story about behind the season 2 podcast. Okay, this is season 2. This is the story behind the overall story of season 2. And it's simply this. Last season we did flash fiction, right? Short stories, right? And this season I wanted to do long stories. I wanted it to be a time where you guys, where the brief introduction and we get right into it so that you guys can just sit back, have your coffee, your beer, your Coke, whatever you want to do, and just listen for 20 minutes, half an hour, depending on the length of the story, and have an experience, right? And that was the goal, right? Like, for season 1, you know, we're finding our voice and trying some stuff. But season 2 is basically just, let's get into story thing. And so that's the story behind season 2, is basically cutting out the front fluff, so to speak. And not that I'm saying season 1 front stuff was fluff, but more so, you know, the front aspect. And just getting right down to business and right down into giving you the story. And then doing this part afterwards, the story behind the story, as sort of the... show part. And I think based on feedback and whatnot, that was a good approach to do. And it was also an approach that I, before season 2 even started, I did a little public poll on social media just asking, like, what do you prefer in terms of order of show? And everyone was like, get to the story, talk about it later. So I was like, all right, let's do that. So that's what we're doing. And that's how we did season 2. So that's the story behind the story for season 2. And now, for any story behind the story before season 3, I will only give a hint. And the hint is simply this. We're going to be picking up back again with Flash Tech, but the show format itself will be different. And we'll hear more about that as we get into season 3 down the road, and the intro episode and all the rest that gets everything set up for the season to follow. But anyway, that's the story behind the story. But,
Mr. Jitterbones. Can you hear it? Can you hear it? Click, clackety clack clack. Click, clackety clack clack. Crap. I better get out of here. I gotta go. He's gonna get me. Stay tuned after the credits, because it talks about the night Mr. Jitterbones came a-haunting. Night Mr. Jitterbones came a-haunting. The night Mr. Jitterbones came a-haunting was the scariest night I knew. He came with his axe a-flaunting. He had a bone to pick or two. I remember him shuffling up the sidewalk I had shoveled the other day. Perhaps he had come to talk with me. But why would he come my way? And I said, "Hey there, Mr. Jitterbones, come a-jiggling down to me. With your eyes real big and your hair real messy, wearing a torn tuxedo, looking kind of dressy." The doorbell rang. I could still hear it in my head, along with the song he sang, saying he's gonna chop me up dead. The lock was bolted, the hall lights drawn dim. My courage weathered and molted, because Mr. Jitterbones wanted in. And I said, "Hey there, Mr. Jitterbones, come a-jiggling down to me. With your eyes real mean and your snarl real curled, death upon your docket and murder to unfurl." He stood there on my porch, with smoke spilling from his ears, his insides no doubt scorched, life burned out of him from all the years. Thwick, thwick, thwack came the axe handle on the door, tick, tick, tock, the clock ticking till the gore. And I said, "Hey there, Mr. Jitterbones, come a jiggling down to me. With your axe real sharp and lust for blood in your gaze, needing a murderous fix is to give you one more day." Mr. Jitterbones stopped, his insistent tapping. Mr. Jitterbones chopped, his lips, they started smacking. In any moment, he'll be in, this demon of the night, and I'd face the music for my sin, but without putting up a fight. And I said, "Hey there, Mr. Jitterbones, stop a-jiggling down to me. With your soul real dark and your heart real needy, seeking satisfaction from a little bloody bleedy." The old man stared, just the way he always does, and leered at me in a glare, as if something were abuzz. And without signal for the eye to see, and without a hint of wire sound, he put his finger to his lips, hushing me, and turned himself around. And I whispered, "Hey there, Mr. Jitterbones, come a-jigglin' back to me. With your smell real sharp and your steppin' so slow, can't you hand me a harp and all my demise to flow?" By the time I arrived at the window's sill, Mr. Jitterbones had gone. But I had no doubt he will return, not after long, and come back onto me, all lovely and shrewd, to set me free from my dismal brood. And I cried, "Hey there, Mr. Jitterbones, come a-jigglin' back to me. With arms open wide and my life freely given, taking me in stride because I'm so sick of living." I shudder now as I think back to then, sometimes not knowing why I do what I do, and I wonder if I'll live again through the scariest night I knew.